Hello and welcome to episode number 25 of this music education podcast called More Than Tones. It's great you're here. This episode is a conversation I had with Claude McKnight. He was sitting in his living room in Los Angeles. I was sitting in my living room in Berlin. And I'm very happy that modern digital technology made it possible that we could talk about making music in groups, about teaching music and leadership. I first met Claude McKnight 4 years ago to do an interview for a German choir magazine, and I clearly remember some things he said that day in Hannover that have really influenced my own musical leadership as a choir leader. So for all the choir leaders out there, I will share the most important point from that first interview with you.
Here we go now. Yeah.
I asked Claude McKnight how groups can learn how to groove and how he as a coach helps other groups to start grooving. Here's what he responded that day, and I have to read it out to you now because I don't have the recording anymore. The groove is something that you have to really be comfortable with each other to understand how to all move and feel as one. That's what makes the groove. You know, when you're not really comfortable enough or have enough time together, that's when the groove can kind of go astray. So I think spending as much time together, whether that's a rehearsal or on the stage, allows each person to understand how you need to either lay it back or all be in the pocket. I think the more time you spend together and respect each other and lift each other up, the better. I think that's what's great about our group. We actually like each other. So the groove means everything. It means our personalities groove together. Our music grooves together. Our rhythm grooves together. If you can't find all of those things, it will be apparent on stage that you don't really have a cohesive group that really works together well. This answer made me realize once again that deliberately working on human relationships, in the sense of how the individuals in a group communicate and interact with each other, is really central when making music together. And this answer has really opened up a new dimension of choir leading for me and changed my leadership style. Now, what else should you know about Take 6 before listening to the upcoming conversation? Here are some facts.
More love is what we need.
This legendary a cappella group has come a long way from their days at Huntsville, Alabama's Oakwood College, where Claude McKnight formed the group as the Gentleman's Estate Quartet in 1980. Quincy Jones called them the baddest vocal cats on the planet. They've won 10 Grammy Awards, 10 Dove Awards, and they were inducted into the Gospel Music Hall of Fame in Nashville in 2014. After all this talking, please sit back and enjoy a little bit of music. Take 6 featuring the amazing Stevie Wonder, who was one of their first supporters.
Good morning, evening, friends. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to tears and pain.
Thank you for meeting me again via Zoom this time.
Yes.
I just checked when we had the last interview. It was in May 2016. Mm-hmm. So it was 4 years ago. And at that time, you didn't know that I'm a music educator, I believe. You didn't know that. But you said many things in that interview that I found interesting from a music education view. You've been making music with Take 6 for decades now on a very high artistic level. And can you maybe start by explaining how you learned everything? How did that happen?
So Take Six has been doing this professionally for 33 years. But I started the group 40 years ago when I was a freshman at the university there. And well before that, each one of us in our family upbringing listened to a lot of music that was very intricate, very jazz oriented. We all read music. We could play music, whether that would be on piano or other instruments. I was a trombone player. Mm-hmm. So I think that those building blocks enabled all of us to be able to come into a group that we have now and already have a good grip on what this kind of music could do.
So you had formal education too, but also informal, both things.
Yes, formal as far as school was concerned. You know, we all took music classes. And informal, you know, we all sang in the choirs at church, and all of our families are very musical. So you get that all the time. You get it from, you know, like I said, the formal side of it, learning what it is you know and how to grow. And then literally being able to parlay that into your family experience, you know, and getting all the creative things that your family can do and just pushing that envelope.
So what do you mean by your family? Do you mean your parents, your brothers and sisters, or what kind of family are you talking about right now?
Personally, I have three younger brothers. And so we all grew up in very close proximity as far as age is concerned. So we listened to a lot of the same kinds of music. My parents were music lovers. So we had everything in the house from jazz to gospel to classic R&B. So we listen. I think listening is the most important tool. You know, you have to be able to expand and listen to things, some things that you like and maybe even things that you don't like, to get an idea of just what else is going on. So I think that that's how it was for us. That was the family part of it, just having music around of all kinds at all times.
That reminds me of this U.S. American music educator who's written a very famous book called Music Matters. And he's saying something quite similar to what you've just said. He says that you need to listen a lot to different styles. And he says that in music education, even music making in classrooms, in formal teaching, the goal should be to be as authentic as possible. And to him, being authentic means that you try to sound like the real style outside of a school. Like if you sing a gospel piece at school, you try to sound like a gospel choir at church. Or if you play the blues, you try to sound like a blues player in a bar, in a smoky bar, for example. So I wanted to talk to you about that. What does being authentic mean to you as a musician? And maybe also as a musician who teaches other groups.
So for me, authenticity is really, really simple. It's figuring out and finding out who you are and being that all the time. So even when you just mentioned the other gentleman who was talking about authenticity, I think it's very important that if you're going to listen to blues, if you're going to listen to jazz or R&B or whatever, and then try to emulate those styles, whatever, only use the elements of what other people do to a certain extent. Make sure that it is always you in there and figure out who you as an artist or as a creative is, because if you don't, well, then you're just doing basically what it is you've heard somebody else do in the way and the style that they do it. And that's not, to me, authenticity. That's learning how to do something, you know, in a way that somebody else has already done it.
Yeah, that would be just copying, right?
And we're all unique. And I think what happens is sometimes we're afraid to be vulnerable and be unique because we don't know if people will like that. And I think that when you're authentic and genuine, it will always find an audience.
So you're saying that it's a bit risky to become authentic, maybe?
Absolutely. Yeah, because now you're not holding on to what somebody else is doing and saying, well, this worked. You're going out on your own and saying, okay, world, let's see if you like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Thank you. Now think about music education in music classrooms. What would it mean for a teacher to be authentic?
Wow, that's a great question. I think that the teachers that I remember that were most influential to me in my development were the ones who were very, very good at teaching from a place that was creative and fun and not just from the book, you know, or not just from the lesson plan. Because you have to stimulate students in a way that allows them to realize that creativity isn't just about the rules. It's not just about the lesson that you just taught. You know, it helps to have those rules because that's the basis and the foundation of what you're doing. But allow for creativity. Allow for some rules to be broken. Allow for questioning. Allow for the ability for people to fail. You know, fail in the sense that just go so far out and it's like, okay, let's reel it back in and understand why that didn't work. You know, because how do you know exactly how far you can push yourself if you never go out there? Either the teachers who allow that or the instructors who allow for that get the best out of their students.
And how do you do that when you give workshops? I know that you work with other groups and also maybe even choirs, so also bigger groups. So how do you do that? How do you manage to do this with these people?
Well, that's interesting because when you're working with groups, part of what makes a group good is sounding enough alike that there is what is called a homogenous sound. It comes together in a way that you don't have a bunch of different vocalists all sticking out and doing their own thing, you know? So to do that in a group setting, you have to find what is the character of the entire group. Mm. What I mean by that is, are the sopranos really dominating? You know, does the sound from the sopranos give them a sound that is like, oh, wow, we've got to always feature the sopranos because they're so strong? Or is it the tenors? You know, are there members in the tenor group that is like, whoa, we've got to feature them? So I think the director needs to understand what are the strengths of this group and then utilize to the best of the group and the instructor's abilities, you know, how to get that to be the front and center point of it. Because in that way, your group can set itself apart from this group or that, you know, and it may just be a couple of people within that group who are the stars. And I don't mean the stars as far as, you know, they're the ones who do all the solos or whatever, but they're the ones who have the best command of vibrato, or those are the ones who have the best lung capacity, so they're able to hold tones longer. You know, so you feed off of what the best parts of the group are and then make that what the group really is.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me what you're saying. Like, you try to find out what's special about this group. And for this, you first have to perceive what they are doing and then build on that.
Absolutely.
But do you make this transparent to them, or don't they know what you are doing? Is it just your plan to work like that? How much are they aware of this?
Wow, that's a great question, because I think the best groups, in my estimation, in my opinion, are the ones where there's enough transparency in what the instructor or the leader of the group is trying to do, so that no one in the group feels like they're not being served or heard, or that they're not important. You figure out the psychological makeup of the group, you know, and I think you try to do that all together. Then that way everybody feels like they're a part of the group and not just being used in the group. You know, I think that's best, because then, you know, again, you're not just showing up for rehearsal and wondering, well, why is he asking me to sing a little softer?
Yeah.
Or why, you know what I mean? You know?
So you would say it's always better to be open about this.
I think so. Yes. I think that's what makes a happy, healthy, creative group.
That's a very nice last sentence. So let's finish here. And thank you so much. Thanks.
Just give the world love.
Thank you for listening and staying with us. If you'd like to comment on this episode, give any kind of feedback, or just want to get in touch, please go to the blog www.mehralstöne.de. And if you're interested in listening to another English episode, scroll down to March 16, 2020. I will publish another English episode soon that was produced by music education students from Berlin. So stay tuned, and in the meantime, enjoy making music.